This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for tuning in on this Monday afternoon. Right here at the beginning, a quick programming note that 2 weeks from today, Cincinnati Edition will be on the air an hour earlier. Starting December 2nd, Cincinnati Edition will begin at 1 p.m., and NPR's program Here and Now will begin at 2 p.m. It's the same Cincinnati Edition, just at a new time. Details about the changes can be seen online at wvxu.org. On the way this afternoon, lots of history. Pulitzer Prize-winning historian and author Doris Kearns Goodwin discusses her new book, The Bully Pulpit, Theodore Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, and the Golden Age of Journalism. She's coming to town tomorrow night for a lecture at the School for Creative and Performing Arts, co-sponsored by Joseph Beth Booksellers and the Cincinnati Museum Center. You'll be part of the conversation with Doris later on the program, and right now, comedy through the ages. The Bad Boys of Abridgment have returned to Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park with the world premiere production of The Complete History of Comedy, Abridged. The Reduced Shakespeare Company, appearing for the third time at the Playhouse. The production will be on stage through December 29th, and here in the studio, familiar faces on NPR and public radio, Reduced Shakespeare Company managing partners, co-managing partners, Austin Titchener and Reed Martin. Questions or comments for the Bad Boys of Abridgment? You can call us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or get in touch through Facebook or Twitter. Hello, guys, and welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thanks, Mark. It's funny to hear you call us familiar faces to NPR listeners. We do have great faces for radio.
Perfect faces for radio.
I have to say, it's been pointed out to me more than once when I was telling folks that the Reduced Shakespeare Company was going to be on Cincinnati Edition that you're no strangers to public radio. You have quite an NPR Reduced Shakespeare Company love affair going on. How did that all start?
I think it started, we performed at the Kennedy Center many times. And the first time was, I think, 1994. Mm-hmm. And we got Robert Siegel, of all things considered, his son had seen the show or something.
Had heard our BBC World Service radio series. We did a six-part radio series called The Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show. And Robert Siegel liked it. So he asked us to come on All Things Considered and talk to us. And from there, well, you know, once you talk to Robert Siegel, your fame just skyrockets.
That's right.
You know.
Oh, everyone in public radio aspires to be interviewed
by
Robert
Siegel.
Well,
this is why we love public radio, because it's really where the big money is, too, as you know.
Yes, I do. Well, the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged. The Bible, abridged. The Complete History of America, abridged. All the great books, abridged. Why now the history of comedy?
That's a good question, Reed.
You're going through the literature. You get Shakespeare and the Bible and God, and now you're doing comedy?
It does seem, in fact, that the show we were born to reduce, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. It's when people say, well, how do you choose the next topic for your show? And there's a few things we consider. But primarily, what are we interested in? Well, we've been spending our whole lives, consciously and unconsciously, preparing to write this show, whether it was a misspent youth watching The Three Stooges and listening to the Smothers Brothers and Bill Cosby.
And Monty Python.
And the whole thing. And so when we're creating a new show, what are we interested in? Well, this is probably what we're more interested than anything else. We also ask people who are going to book us, you know, here's some shows we're thinking about. Does that tickle your fancy? Does it tickle the public's fancy? Would it play internationally? Because we play a lot in the UK, Ireland, Asia. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a topic that we loved, and that's how it came about.
Yeah, it's a topic we love, and it has, as you say, that international, you know, it's an international subject matter. Everybody has different forms of comedy. In a lot of ways, it was the hardest show for us to write because the subject matter is so dear to us, but also because, you know, we both know-it-alls, comedian know-it-alls. Well, comedy works this way because of this, and then you go, oh, shut it. And there's that famous quote, was it Walt Kelly, Pogo, you know, who said, you know, you can examine comedy, but examining comedy is like dissecting a frog. The frog tends to die while you're doing that. And we wanted to not have a two-hour dead show.
No, we wanted to kill. We didn't want to die.
Yes, exactly.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, I wondered, you just opened, last Thursday or so, I think, up at Playhouse in the Park. I haven't had a chance to see the production, but I was very curious from the outset when I heard you were doing this. where do you start in the history of comedy? Where, I mean, you know, where did you, as comedy know-it-alls, where did y'all decide?
How dare you, sir?
Well, it began with cave art in a cave in France, you know.
Well, we start with the birth of comedy,
yeah,
which is literally a cave woman giving birth to 22 babies. it's like a clown car for cavemen. Yes, but then we go back. I mean, it isn't. Austin, we're pretty active on Facebook, and Austin had put something up. He said, asking people what we should cover. And of course, what most people expect you to cover is the last 50 or 75 years, because that's what people know. But for us, the fun is going way back, and you surprise people. Mm-hmm. So we find, you know, where did the slapstick come from?
Yeah. Who invented the rubber chicken?
Yeah.
who invented the whoopee cushion? Turns
yes.
out it was a Roman, an ancient
yeah.
Roman.
Ancient Roman emperor.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first knock-knock joke is probably William Shakespeare. You know, so you find stuff like that, and then it's real fun, and so people are surprised, and you know, we have a scene where Austin's complaining. Of course, you have to have whoopee cushions and fart jokes in the history of comedy. And so Austin's character's complaining, and I said, well, for your information, Homer, Chaucer, and Mark Twain all wrote fart jokes.
Yes, but they were masters. Farts should not be left in the hands of amateurs.
Farts should not be left in anyone's hands.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
And that can be really dangerous, though, because, to borrow a Shakespearean term, some of these jokes can get bawdy.
Yes, they can get bawdy.
This show, I think, of all of our shows, we issue a little. I don't think we've ever actually cursed in any of our previous shows.
It's true.
And so in this one, you give a little disclaimer near the beginning.
Well, we do. Yeah, we just say we do warn people that because we're telling the entire history of comedy, we will also be covering the humor of bodily functions. We will be discussing farts. We also make fun of bottoms. We embrace comically large bosoms. And we touch upon penises of all sizes. Also, there is the occasional swear word, which are fine, noble Anglo-Saxon words, which I'm sure none of your listeners have ever heard before. But still, if there are any children in the audience, we always encourage them to cover their parents' ears because they'll be embarrassed by what the kid is hearing. But don't worry, it's just a phase, and they'll grow out of it.
Oh, my God. I'm speaking with Austin Titchener and Reed Martin from the Reduced Shakespeare Company, talking about the complete history of comedy abridged on stage at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. You can join the conversation. Ask a question or make a comment if you want at 513-419-7100 here on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. And, well, you mentioned the first knock-knock joke. I mean, did you find out? I mean, did the knock-knock joke come before Shakespeare or since?
Well, we were saying that cavemen invented the rock joke.
Right. Yeah, so we say the show goes from cavemen telling rock jokes to Chris Rock telling Chris Rock jokes.
But that in itself is kind of a homage to the 2,000-year-old man, Mel Brooks. You know, what was the language? We spoke rock. That's what we rock this, rock that. That's, you know, it's all been done. You know, so that was another thing that honestly made me trepidatious, if that's a word, about doing the show, because there have been histories of comedy before, but the challenge is to not make it a history lesson, but to give it urgency.
And to write funny sketches.
Yeah.
Know? So we're trying to tell the history of comedy. We really are.
Yeah.
But we're all, you know, obviously it's a comedy, so we want it to be funny. We don't want it to be like Sigmund Freud's jokes and their relation to the unconscious, which is like the worst.
Right.
It's the driest thing. Or Henri Bergson's,
yeah,
you know, essay called Laughter from 1900, which is the least funny thing ever written.
Talk about a couple of dead frogs.
Yeah, yeah. Those got dissected to death.
Well, and it ultimately became, as since the subject matter is so dear, it actually became maybe the most personal and sort of spiritual of our shows.
About why comedy is important to us and why comedy is important to the world.
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, a little bit, you know, the theater is my temple a little bit. Comedy maybe is my religion. So I was able to exaggerate that honest feeling in myself and exaggerate it for comic effect. And that was fun.
Yeah, it's definitely our bias, but we feel comedy is underappreciated. Even if you look at the Oscars, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis always wins for most acting.
Yes.
but, you know, what about Bill Murray? How come Groucho Marx never won an Oscar? Or W.C. Fields, you know?
Right, but somehow Sir Nicolas Cage has won an Oscar.
Yes. Yes, Madam Anna Paquin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you mentioned that comedy is so much of the moment, and you know, there's very stylized comedy through the ages. For it, and as lovers of it And, you know, I know I've been accused more than once of knowing plenty of useless stuff that I can spout out at will. You know, and sometimes you want to share it all, but you know you can't. You have to pull it back. How do you decide what to include, what to exclude? Is that where your personal biases are coming in?
Well, we write what's funny to us. Years ago, Bernard Levin, who was a sort of the dean of London theater critics, came to see our show in London, and we were writing our second show, The History of America, and we said, well, how do we approach this? I mean, and he said, well, you have to write what's funny to you and let the chips fall where they may. Yeah. And that's turned out to be great advice. So we write what's funny to us. But then we have to find out if it's funny to the audience.
Yeah. So our personal bias can get in the way, for sure. But yeah. But ultimately, the audience is like the fourth member of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. If they're laughing, then we know it's working. And if and even if their reaction is one of horror, as long as it's loud horror, you know.
And we're doing it intentionally.
And we're doing it intentionally, you know, we're happy with that. Yeah.
Well-placed groans
yes,
are welcome, right?
Absolutely.
But I think like any comedians, we try out the material. This is the official world premiere here at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, but we did a workshop production out in Napa, California. Over the summer, which Austin and I didn't act in. We wrote it and directed it. So we can sit in the audience and watch it and see what's working and make notes and rewrite scenes and not have to memorize it for that evening.
Yeah.
And so it's like a stand-up taking his act on the road before shooting an HBO special. You hone it and hone it and hone it.
And one of the things we love about just comedy generally, performing comedy certainly, is that it is absolutely interactive. You know, if they're laughing, it's working. If they're not, it's not. And you talked about groans. Groans is a way comedy depends so much upon – now I'm one of those guys. Comedy depends, as you know. But it relies on status a lot, the higher status versus a lower status character. But I think it's also a status with the audience. You know, you want to – I think an audience wants the comedian to be ahead of them, to be in control. But there are times when the audience wants to be control. And that's when they're groaning, letting you know they didn't like a joke. Yeah. Or whatever, and that's fun too for the audience to be in charge, and for the comedians to kind of go, yeah, you're right, right. Moving on.
Well, and it's fun. I mean, yes, it's, at times the audience has status above us that we're intentionally stupid, and vice versa, and it's fun.
Right. Well, sometimes the audience is intentionally stupid. Wait, is that what you meant?
No, always.
Oh, okay.
Reed Martin, Austin Titchener.
Wait,
from the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Yeah, this interview is really
he knows you better than I thought.
Hey, I have to watch that. Maybe we should abridge this as it goes along. Talking about the complete history of comedy abridged on stage at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. And I wanted to ask, you know, it seems a danger when you're talking about the history of comedy that you go back to do old bits that everybody's heard already. You know, who's on first?
You have to think of a new interpretation. And as a matter of fact.
Yes, in fact, we do have our own, shall we say, Elizabethan interpretation. You know, it was a glorious time in the Elizabethan era. They were perfect time to attend the theater. There were so many playhouses to choose from. The Rose, the Curtain, the Theater.
Oh, Petruchio Costello.
Oh, Friar Abbott.
Art thou bound for the theater?
Aye, verily, I am bound for the Rose.
So thou art not bound for the theater?
Aye, my lord, 'tis the Rose for which I am bound.
Good sir, I remain confused. Thou sayest thou art not bound for the theater.
Sir, you remain witless and deaf. The theater is my destination. I am bound for the Rose.
But not the theater?
Aye, the theater, thou addle-pated clotpoll. What strange malady possesseth thee? I am going to the Rose Theater.
Now I perceive we might have been at cross purposes. I ask if you're going to the theater. Burbage's specifically named playhouse.
I mistook you, sir. I thought thou maintained some foul malevolence towards the Rose.
Oh, no, sir. The Rose by any other name.
Blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, needs must be off, good friar, or I shall miss the curtain.
My lord, the curtain is that way.
Why do you tell me this?
I don't know.
Third base. Thank you so much.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell, and they are the Reduced Shakespeare Company, talking about the complete history of comedy abridged.
It just occurs to me that you asked about old bits. We took an old bit and made it older.
Older. I was not going to point that out.
Devolution.
Well, you were talking about the creative process and having gone through a workshop with this, and since you did open and perform beginning last week, I'm guessing that you're learning more and more from the audiences. And what has changed and evolved even in the short time that has been on stage here already?
Well, we cut one entire scene that worked fine. It just wasn't in the right place. Mm-hmm. There's lots of things where when we're creating a scene, you always want to finish it with a bang. And sometimes as we perform a scene, we realize, you know, the big laugh is about four lines from the end. So we need to, you know, invert it or cut the last three lines. So there's a lot of things like that. Mm-hmm. There's a surgery scene where we're operating on Dominic and funny things come out of him.
That's why he's not here today. He's recovering.
He's recovering. That's what he does on his Mondays.
Yeah.
And so we realized, well, the funniest thing we're pulling out wasn't right at the, you know, so it's that sort of thing where you have to move things around a little bit.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's also a fine line that we walk because there is a plot, and I'm using air quotes as I say plot. And
everybody could see that.
Yeah, on radio, it's good. Very effective.
And the plot is always the same in our shows. It's can these three idiots get through the entire task of what they're setting out to do? Well, no, they can't, but they don't know that it's impossible. So there are times where, oh, we're kind of going, oh, it's not as funny as it should be. Well, no, this is the plot point. Oh, right, okay.
Don't belabor it. Get it and go.
Get it and go. Well, and this has become our motto as well. It's always been our motto, but it's the first time we've been actually able to incorporate it into the show. It's get in, get the laugh, get out.
Quite effective for this show, I guess.
Yeah, yes. Even more so, yes.
From an email, are there subjects that you won't turn into comedy, a line that you won't cross when it comes to religion? You know, comedy can be known for its furious side as well for its lighter side.
Well, I always find my favorite kind of comedy is the comedy that takes on something important. So, and I think that's why I love what we do with the Reduced Shakespeare Company. The definition of important fluctuates a little bit. But like our first show was Shakespeare. Our second show was The Complete History of America Abridged, which was historical, yes, but political too. And our third show was The Bible, The Complete Word of God Abridged. And it was Old Testament first act, New Testament second act. When we took it to Israel, of course, it was just a one act.
Zing.
But I guess we would have to, it's always, as Reed said earlier, it always has to be a topic that we love. You know, we don't do comedy to hurt. You know, sometimes we make pointed jokes and some.
Well, the good comedy makes a point. I think where we would draw the line is you don't want to make fun of people who are powerless.
Yeah.
Right? I think good comedy is mocking the powerful and the pretentious.
Yeah.
And I think some people sort of get it mixed up sometimes. And if you're, mocking the powerless, well, that's no good.
What's funny about that? I think that's called bullying, actually.
Yes. Yeah.
So what, you know, in this great repertoire you had to choose from when you're talking about the complete history as it goes along and you love comedy as much as you do, what did you not include that you wanted to? What did you fight over? What did
Smothers
you want
Brothers.
To?
The Smothers Brothers. The Smothers Brothers is one that we didn't. I was just wondering, Steve Martin just got an honorary Oscar like that. And I went, wait, is he in there? Oh, no, he is in there.
Yeah.
We've got him in there. Key and Peele. Key and Peele, current hip, hot comedy act on Comedy Central. So funny. Very, very funny.
Well, we were talking backstage. One of the set pieces of the show is there's a timeline that wraps all the way around the theater, going from the dawn of civilization, actually the dawn of the creation of the earth, all the way to the present day. And it's very funny. And if you come see the show, make sure you get there early and take a look at that. There's just all kind of visual and verbal jokes. And we were talking yesterday, I think, one thing, The Onion.
Yeah.
Oh. Which is something we just find hilarious and admire that got left out.
Yeah, it's true. And so we're always trying to squeeze in whatever we can, get in whatever influences we can. And sometimes Weird Al Yankovic is mentioned twice. So, but sometimes it's just a glancing reference, but Weird Al gets twice.
Well, I see, Austin, that you brought your ukulele here and you gave me a setup for it because you get a song. Who were your comedic influences as you were growing up and had the most influence on the comedy that we see in The Complete History of Comedy, Abridged?
Well, it's funny you should ask, Mark. Thank you so much for asking. I'll try to make this as quite as dry and important. It suddenly occurred to me that that this was a way to kind of go talk about some things that I loved. And Reed contributed to this as well. So it's something stuff we both loved. And as David Alan Greer used to say in Living Color, in one of his characters, he said, wrote a little song about it like the here it goes. I laughed till I cried. I thought I would die. When Dick Van Dyke came in the door, tripped over the ottoman onto the floor. And my very favorite joke machine was Mad Magazine. the knights who say nee. They just destroyed me when Arthur rode across the moors and Michael Palin said, someday, lad, all this will be yours.
What, the curtains?
No, not the curtains, lad. What's wrong with her? She's beautiful, she's rich, she's got huge tracts of land. Everyone just howled with glee, not just me. I love Looney Tunes, they were always so funny, like Porky and Daffy, especially Bugs Bunny, plus Chaplin and Keaton and Cosby and now Mr. Bean. The Coens, the Zuckers, the Farrelly Brothers, John Hughes, Billy Wilder, and a couple of others made some of the funniest movies that I've ever seen. They made me laugh till I cry, ooh, plus Laurie and Fry, and the Fireside Theater and Bob and Ray, Lily Tomlin and Will Ferrell and Tina Fey. And Spinal Tap was my idea of heaven. It goes to 11. I laughed till I cried. I thought I would die watching Make 'em Laugh in Singing in the Rain or Woody Allen sneezing cocaine. Speaking of which, I always loved Richard Pryor. He was on fire. Gilda Radner, Gene Wilder, Bill Murray, Steve Martin, Phyllis Diller, and Borga, and Mel Brooks and Farton, Red Skelton, Three Stooges, The Goon Show, and Fanny Bryce. I love Danny Kaye and the Courtchester sword fight and Animal House with that funny food court fight. I saw Bill Hicks rant and Second City improvise. Ooh, and Louis C.K. and Chris Rock, Eddie Izzard, and Patton Oswalt is a bit of a wizard, and Don Rickles says racist things with a comical snarl. Melissa McCarthy, the Nutty Professor, Weird Allen, Stan Freeberg, Tom Lehrer, Frank Lesser, and Groucho, and Chico, and Harpo, and Zeppo, and Carl. I can wait for you to catch up. The great Peter Sellers, so solemn, yes, silly, and Ricky, and Robin, and Whoopi, and Billy, and Jonathan Winters forever had me on the floor. And Carol Burnett, who was funny and generous, Mae West, Dorothy Parker, and Ellen DeGeneres, and Rhoda, and Mary Tyler, and so many more. Anyway, I laughed till I cried, but now I am fried, 'cause things are very tough today. But The Simpsons and Daily Show make it okay. 'Cause if I did not know how to laugh, I would cry.
So why do you have a whole show? You got it right there in the song, Austin.
That's the complete history of comedy abridged. Abridged.
There you go.
Austin Titchener, who, along with Reed Martin, joining me today on Cincinnati Edition. They are the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and they, along with Dominic Conti, are performing The Complete History of Comedy Abridged at the Playhouse in the Park through December 29th. Details on WVXU.org. So you're doing the history, the complete history of comedy abridged. Where do you want to go with this? Where do you plan on taking it? That international scene?
Well,
is that where
I think once you play in Cincinnati, you got to go to Dayton.
Yeah, possibly Akron.
the Massillon, Canton, Akron Metroplex.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't forget the Quonset, huh? Yes.
don't forget to tip your waitress. Well, our next run of it, we finish here December 29th. We're going to be playing in Massachusetts for a month. In April and May, and we hope we take it to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this summer in August, which is the biggest theater festival in the world, and kind of launch it internationally there. So fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Thanks for visiting this afternoon.
Thank you for having us. It's a great, actually, way to spend our day off. Thank you.
Reed Martin and Austin Titchener from the Reduced Shakespeare Company performing at Playhouse in the Park through December 29th. Again, details at WVXU.org.